Okay. Welcome, everybody, to the Transportation and Transit Policy and Oversight Division. I'm Frank Kornstein, Chair, and we have a double header today, members. We are going to hear six bills between now and 2:30, and then we will recess until 6. We'll hear the remainder of the bills on the agenda, and at that point, we will be pretty much done with our work in terms of House files for the session. We're still waiting to hear if there will be some Senate files coming over, and if so, we will hear those on the 17th at a, what I would imagine a relatively brief meeting. So just hang in there one more afternoon and evening, and we've had a lot of bills that have come to us kind of late in the game, and that's why our agenda is so long, but we want to accommodate members that do have bills, and we're hearing them. So our first bill on the agenda is House File 1718, Representative Clark. Welcome.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman.
I'd like to move the minutes of March 9th with a correction on members present. Put an S on the end of David.
Okay.
Sorry.
We will...
I'm very sensitive.
We have a quorum, so we can move the minutes. And with that, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And now, Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have an amendment that I would ask we put on the bill so it could be in the form that...
First of all, actually, we have a change in terms of the motion. So, Representative Clark, I will move... Oh, I heard some electronic devices, so that's a reminder that everybody should please turn off any cell phones or other devices, not only because it's in consideration of the public that's here and our committee, but it also... affects our communication, the microphones, et cetera. So, but Representative Clark, I will move that House File 1718 be recommended to pass and be sent to the Transportation Finance and Policy Committee. Oh, I'm sorry, the Finance Committee, with a re-referral to the Transportation Finance Committee. So, you can proceed. Thank you.
So, Mr. Chairman, if you might also please move the amendment, the A1 amendment, please.
Okay. Representative Clark, I will then move the A1 amendment. Apparently it's not in the committee's possession as of yet. Don't know if we have anyone from... Okay. Well, Representative Clark, why don't we're going to reproduce that amendment. We'll at least have you explain the bill, and then we'll address the amendment question later.
Good. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll do that. First of all, I want to thank you for the hearing on this this bill. As you can see, there are many people who have come over today who don't usually spend a lot of time here in the legislature, who have a very strong interest in this proposal. What we're trying to do is to make sure that all of our people in Minnesota have access to driver's licenses, and that I view this as a public safety issue. There are many people who are working in our state who don't have the kind of documentation that in the past might have been required, for example, Social Security numbers. So in what this bill does is, in place of requiring that, it says that any government issued ID from another country will satisfy the requirement for identification for the purposes of getting a driver's license. Minnesota would not be the first state in doing this kind of change in our law, Mr. Chairman. There are at least four other states, New Mexico, Hawaii, Utah, and Washington, who have made alternative forms of ID for the purpose of getting driver's license available to their residents. And I can tell you, again, just for an example, in New Mexico, one of the issues there was uninsured drivers. Before they changed their law to allow an alternative, they had 33% people who were uninsured on the roads. And after they changed the law, it dropped to 11%. We have some issues here in Minnesota with that kind of uninsured driver. And so this is an effort to try to bring this out into the light and allow a lot of our workers and immigrants in Minnesota who have not necessarily the Social Security number that they would need to be able to participate in the economy legally and have a driver's license. So, Mr. Chairman, there's quite a bit of testimony we're going to hear from different folks. going to have to do, I think I have four witnesses, we'll try to be brief, but I think there's some important messages for you to hear about why this is a very good bill to pass. And I guess I'll start by asking Josefina Franco to provide some testimony, and then this is about three other witnesses, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you very much, Representative Clark. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for our record.
Yes, my name is Josefina Franco, Josefina, last name Franco. I am with the Mujeres en Liderazgo, Women Leadership, representing my community, workers, class, and students. We're here to ask for your support on the Bill of Safety License. Several years ago, when I came to the United States, it was back like in the 70-something, and I had a really hardship coming here, and my parents also had problems with having a license, and now my brothers and all the families they've been really successful people. And I'm here to, I'm a person that is the voice of my community, that they ask for a license to have a better, safe community. And several years ago when I became a citizen of the United States, I realized the importance of working to have a better communities. My children and I live in this beautiful state, and I am working to make it a safer place for everyone. People have different ideas about immigration, but today is not the issue in discussion here. Today we are talking about safety. Ladies and gentlemen, there's nothing positive. We all agree we want safer street, and this is the opportunity to work to accomplish that. I have my ID, but I really I have insurance, and this by providing insurance is for the people is a good source of economical improvement. And this is Minnesota is a wonderful state to live, and that's what we need to have a better state to improve economically. And we're the best schools. We have the best schools and in education, and we have the better staff to have this situation resolved. So thank you for listening to me, and thanks to Minnesota people. That I know that you make the right decision. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Franco. Does the committee have any questions of Ms. Franco? Okay. Thank you so much. Representative Clark?
Yes, I believe the next person is Bruce Nestor.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Bruce Nestor, and is in Nancy, E-S-T-O-R. I'm an attorney, a business owner, and a resident in South Minneapolis. And I just want to speak in favor of the proposal before this committee. To me, this is really more than anything about building a stronger community and a stronger state. It's about civic inclusion, and it's about also coming to grips about the changes in our state and about the future of our state. And if you look out in the audience today and the leadership and the organizing of the community and of the women who brought this proposal before the committee, you're really seeing what the future of our state is about, and the need that we have now to address and include all people who are living in residence in Minnesota as part of our community. And I see that every day in South Minneapolis where I live and the fabric of my neighborhood. And I really think it's not a question of whether we're going to give driver's licenses to all residents of our state, but when. And we can do it now and start to build a stronger community, or we can put it off and not have a stronger community. It's also, to me, about an issue of public safety. As an attorney, I'm in court. I see people charged with no driver's licenses. I see people who don't have insurance, because without a driver's license, you can't register your vehicle. And this, the reality is, and I think the statistics cited by Representative Clark apply not only in New Mexico, but I think that Utah saw the same increase in auto insurance rates and the drop in non-insurance violations once they allowed all residents to have driver's licenses. I think it's also an issue of public safety for police officers performing their job. A reliable form of identification allows officers to know whom they're dealing with when they encounter people in the course of their duties. It's also about safer streets in terms of allowing people not to be victims of crime. If you have a driver's license, you can open a bank account, you can deposit money, you're not carrying cash with you and making yourself vulnerable and a potential victim of crime. To me, and very important, it's about economic vitality too. It's about allowing people to participate in our economy, who we know they're here, they're paying property taxes on their homes, they're paying sales taxes when they make purchases, and a driver's license allows them again to open bank accounts and to participate in the economy. I guess I just urge that this not get tied up in the politics of immigration. I think regardless of where you fall on the issue of immigration, almost everyone believes that the immigration system is broken, that it's not a state responsibility, but it's a federal responsibility. To me, the issue of driver's licenses is about recognizing that the state of Minnesota issues a driver's license because it serves purposes of the state of Minnesota. It makes sure that people pass an exam before they drive. It allows them to get insurance. It allows police officers to identify people. Those state interests are served by this legislation, and it should not get tied up in the rhetoric or the politics of immigration. So I urge support of this bill.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Mr. Nestor? Appreciate your coming down. Thank you.
Thank you. Next will be Jonathan.
Good afternoon. Jonathan Gudino, G-U-D-I-N-O. I was brought here when I was 13 years old legally. Everything got done correctly. And currently working at the University of Minnesota with adolescents that have HIV. I learned how to advocate fairly efficiently for somebody that's their rights are being perhaps not treated correctly. And seeing changes. Out of all the social services I have seen, women that have domestic abuse and many barriers to improving their lives. With this bill, I started working with the women in leadership, and it's pretty clear of all the benefits economically, how the state can benefit from actually having more revenue, how all the benefits of people feeling safety that if I get into a car accident with my family, the older driver has insurance as well as a driver's license. And in itself, you know, I'm not the best spoken person, but the reality is that the person that doesn't feel that they can call the cops and connect with the government, a lot of times that gap can get too wide. I'm also a member of a Latino Advisory Committee for the mayor of Minneapolis and the city council, and that's one of the main goals, how to create different channels for them to feel safe, that they can rely on the government, and change the community improves by them relying on the cops, them having trust in the government, and if there's anything else.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative David.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you
very much, Mr. Gudino.
I just asked for roll call.
Okay. A roll call has been requested on the vote.
All right.
Finally, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask Jovita Morales.
My name is Jovita Morales, J-O-V-I-T-A, and Morales is M-O-R-A-L-E-S. And I'm here with the Mujeres en Liderazgo, the Women Leadership. We saw in the community, a lot of in the community, the issue that we have day by day living in the street, and you can see a lot of cases that they don't have access. Instead of when they drive, the people driving, they don't have access. They don't have access to how to drive. They can how they can take the family to the clinic, to the school. Sometimes we have parents that they were saying that they was in the winter, they waiting for a lot of time for waiting for the bus, and the bus sometimes is coming late, and those family they have to work to take the bus, or you know you can lose your job, or you cannot support a lot of for your family. I have a story that I can read for one of the case that we have. And I'm going to read it in Spanish. And also, I have Veronica that she's going to translate for me. Mi problema empezó en el abril 2009, which my problem began in April 2009. My husband, Jose, was detention. Fue detenido como eso. Fue detenido como eso a las 11 de la mañana de la noche, perdón.
My husband was detained at about 11 o'clock at night. For the reason was that he didn't have a driver's license.
El policía que lo detuvo ya la había parado como dos veces.
The police officer that detained him had already stopped him two times.
Anteriormente entiendo que manejar sin licencia es un delito.
Just to start with, I know that driving without a license is a crime.
Pero ya diría que menor. Han llegado demasiado lejos.
But at the same time, this has gone too far.
Una vez el estado estando en la cárcel.
Once he was in the jail.
Le mandaron a inmigración.
They sent immigration.
Y le dijeron en corte que única opción que tenía era deportación voluntaria.
And they told him when he went to court that his only option was voluntary deportation.
Para salir de la cárcel no tenía que pagar tenía que pagar $8,000.
In order to get out of jail, he needed to pay $8,000.
Pues yo tuve la esperanza siempre de sacarlo.
And I always had the hope that I would be able to get him out.
En cada corte que tenía.
In every one of the different times that he went to court.
Tenía que tener un abogado.
He had to get a lawyer.
Para pedir que le dieran más tiempo para yo conseguir el dinero.
And he needed the lawyer to tell them to please give us more time so that I could get the money to be able to get him out.
Y finalmente cuando yo tenía los $1,000.
And once I had finally had the $8,000,
su última corte la juez y no quiso agarrar la fianza.
In the final session in court, the judge would not accept the bond.
Y mi esposo fue deportado en septiembre de 2009.
And my husband was deported in September of 2009.
Para esto que todo pasó, yo luché.
With everything that happened, I fought.
Busqué un abogado e hice lo imposible para que se quedara.
I found a lawyer and I did even the impossible to try to get him to be able to stay.
Para terminar, este abogado me cobró como eso de 4,000.
And at the end of the day, this lawyer charged me about $4,000.
Porque en cada corte eran $1,000 y también tuve que pagar su boleto.
And because each time we went to court was $1,000.
Mi propósito de querer que la gente se entere de mi problema es porque no quiero que nadie le pase esto.
And the reason that I'm telling the story and that I want people to hear about this story is because I don't want this to happen to anybody else.
Y que por solo no tener licencia pasen este tipo de cosas.
And that for no reason, for somebody only because they didn't have a driver's license, that this would have to happen to them. My daughters are suffering tremendously because of the absence of their father.
No, es justo lo que está pasando.
And what's happening is not just. Everybody needs to have the right and access to a driver's license so that this sort of thing doesn't happen.
Okay, this is the story for one of the women who they don't want to send names and last names. So, and the other one, I think we have another case. We should read it, but it's in English one, I think. And another case that's in English, and Eric's going to help me.
I'm from Mexico, and I've lived in Minnesota for 7 years. Ever since I arrived here, I've had many difficulties due to not having a driver's license. I did not have access to open a bank account, so I always have to cash my checks when I get paid. This increases my risk for assault and decreases security for myself and my family. I always have to bring cash when I want to buy anything. I cannot use credit cards or checks because all of these require identification. I have two children, a two-year-old and a three-year-old. Both were born in Minnesota. Like all mothers, I have to take them with me to buy groceries, to my English classes, or to the library, or doctor, or school, or to the gym. We have to walk three blocks just to catch the first city bus. Ever since they were babies, they have been exposed to temperatures below zero for long periods of time because their mother does not have a driver's license. I would like for you to consider not only my situation, but that of thousands of other mothers that are in the same situation that I'm in. When we go to work, we have to take our children into extreme temperatures. Whatever law that has been passed that leaves Minnesotan citizens suffer like this at such a young age needs to be changed. I could not sleep at night if I had been the person responsible for passing a law that affects and punishes so many people. In June of 2009, my daughter had to have surgery. They asked for my ID when I brought her to the hospital to prove that I was her mother. I understand why they need this information, but what I cannot understand is why they would not accept my Mexican passport until my lawyer called them. This was so frustrating. My daughter was having surgery, and I could not go through to the waiting room because I did not have an ID from the United States. Another thing that makes me very sad is that I do not have an official document that expresses my strong desire to be an organ donor so that other people in need could have my organs if I were to die in an accident. Without an ID, there is no way to prove or to document this wish. All of us that are here are working, and we want to live with dignity, which includes the opportunity to drive without fear of going from one place to the next so that we may take care of our daily needs of our families. We need a solution.
Concludes the testimony.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions of the committee to the testifiers? Okay, Representative Clark, we do have the A1 amendment now copied, and so if you want to talk about it, we'll vote that onto your bill and then vote on your bill as a whole.
And Mr. Chair, I do have questions, but not for the testifier, for the author, and maybe Ms. McCormick. So
of course, yes.
After the amendment.
So why don't we do the amendment first, and then we'll have some questions of the author and others. Representative Clark, to the A1 amendment. I will move it, by the way. So just briefly, what does it accomplish?
Mr. Chairman, what it does is it makes it very clear that the definition of a government identification card is an acceptable form of identity for a Minnesota person applying for a driver's license, and that it is a primary document for the purpose of Minnesota rules.
Okay. Discussion of the amendment. This is to get the bill in the shape that the author would like us to consider it in.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Clark, it's, and the amendment says a government. Which government are we talking about?
Mr. Chairman and Representative David, my understanding and working with Mr. Burris on this is that we are talking about a government other than the United States government.
Thank you. Any additional questions to the amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. We have before us then House File 1718 as amended. Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Clark, just a clarification on the story about the gentleman that was deported. Maybe I don't understand, but the deportation would have been because of his immigration status, not because of the driver's license issue. Is that correct?
Representative Clark.
Yes, my understanding is that the reason that he ended up with the issue of deportation is because he did not have a driver's license and was arrested at that point.
Okay, but we can't deport somebody just because
right.
they don't have a driver's license. It's their immigration status
That's
that
right.
determines that. And then I don't know if this is a question for you or maybe Ms. McCormick. Having been on this committee for a number of years after 9/11, there was a big push about continuity of documents for driver's license, and different states had different levels, and that in fact the driver's license being used relative to financial institutions and some of the homeland security type of issues. So I'm curious, the other states that have done this, have they do they put immigration status on their document, or how do they address those federal document security kind of issues in their states?
Representative Clark and or Ms. McCormick. Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, I couldn't save in each and every state. I know that in some cases they use the IRS reporting form in lieu of a Social Security number. People are paying taxes, and they may use that. But I'm not sure in each state how that would comport with the issue that you're raising. I guess that's something we'd have to figure out in Minnesota as well. Right now, I do know that these states have found it to their benefit to allow people to have an alternative form of identification so that they can deal with this issue of public safety and insurance.
And Mr. Chair, I'm not arguing with that point. You've made a compelling, you know, argument about people needing a driver's license to get insurance and get around for economic reasons. But maybe Ms. McCormick, if she could come to the stand. The whole move, for at least from my perspective in the last 10 years, is that we have continuity of documentation, so the driver's license in all 50 states means kind of the same thing. And so, Ms. McCormick, if you have, I mean, I hate to even bring up the real ID issue because that's like swearing in this committee, but you know, real ID kind of came out of that, and I think that's been put by the wayside. But I don't believe that there's ever been any move to dilute the requirements of documentation for driver's licenses. And at one point, Minnesota was working towards some kind of list whereby if another state had similar documentation, we would take that state's driver's license for those that moved into our state as opposed to the original documents, but that some states' requirements were so low that we wouldn't take their license. So can you tell us where we've evolved or where we're at with all of this?
Ms. McCormick, welcome to the committee, and I know we'll be hearing from you later on other bills, but please identify yourself for our record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Pat McCormick, Director of Driver and Vehicle Services, and to respond to Representative Holberg's question, we have passed identification rules. This is a copy of it. I don't have more than two copies, so, but if the committee wants a copy, we can certainly make it for them. There's every person that applies for a driver's license must have a primary document and a secondary document, or else two primary documents. And as Representative Holberg was saying, we did change the law when we developed those rules so that you couldn't use another state's driver's license or ID card as a primary document. And that was because states have such different requirements that we weren't able to rely on the fact that they had the other states had the same requirements that we had. As you know, we are a state that requires legal presence. So what that means is you either have to be here as a temporary resident or a permanent resident if you are here on immigration documents, or else you have to be able to authenticate your identity through a passport or a certified driver's or a certified birth certificate. And we do, of course, have a variance process where we do allow other documentations and possibly attestations from other individuals so that we can document that you are who you say you are. So I think the issue for us that I think other states have wrestled with in this issue about allowing other countries' identification cards is that a lot of these identification cards are easy to replicate, and they may not have security features on them so that we can authenticate that individual. And so that is why at this time we don't allow other government identity cards. So I don't know if that responds to your
question. Thank you, Ms. McCormick. Representative Holbrook,
and
a follow-up.
Mr. Chair, and that's helpful as a baseline. Do you have any information about the states that have allowed for the four states that Representative Clark referred to, how they accomplish that? And I didn't hear too much discussion about the federal standards about authenticating who you are in order to get a driver's license and what the feds have imposed on the states relative to that as well.
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, I think Representative Clark is correct, but I can't remember the newest state that just changed their law, and I can't remember which one it is, but I know that in general it is using some kind of a tax document to show that you're paying taxes in that state, and I don't know how they authenticate the residency. That's always a concern for us as well, that people reside. That's one of the reasons we're a central issue state, because we send the driver's license to that residency, so that the resident, so that we know the person lives there. And if they're not at that address, then the driver's license gets forwarded back to our offices, so that it can't go to an empty lot or whatever. So that's one of the issues that I think most states are going to, is a central issue process rather than just producing a card and providing it to an individual over the counter, which used to be the case in the majority of states. So I'd have to do some further checking to be able to get that information to you. I don't have it off, but I think in general it's related to paying taxes and documenting that.
Representative Holberg,
I'm sorry, time's short and you got a long agenda, but is with the use of the driver's license in order to open up checking accounts, etc., I thought that also had to do with whether or not what your status was as far as your immigration status, of that was important under the 9/11 security stuff. Is that true, or am I mixing apples and oranges here? Or
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, my understanding is that, that may have been true immediately after 9/11, but that in general, most banks now do allow government identification cards so that you can open up a checking account. In general, I think, the most states are trying to abide by the immigration laws and also trying to be able to license their drivers, and that's without real ID on the table right now. That's really up to every state individually, but as I said, our state is requires legal presence in order to get a driver's license.
All right, thank you.
Representative Holberg. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. McCormick, what's the department's position on HF 1718 as amended?
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, the department would supports a current system that we have at the present time, which is requiring legal presence.
Well, Mr. Chair, Ms. McCormick, that didn't answer my question. What's the department's position on House File 1718 as amended?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, that this would allow for us to be able to use a government identification card as a primary document for receiving a driver's license. And my concern with that would be that we would have to be able to ensure that there were security features on those cards from other governments. If that was the case and that became law, obviously we would, in general we support legal presence, but if you're adding this, which doesn't necessarily state that you're here legally, that the government and other country's government ID card, we would need to have security features on there that we could ensure that that person was who they say they are, because often the documents, and I haven't seen any recently, so I do want to preface my statement with that, but many countries' government ID cards do not have the types of security features that state driver's licenses have, which prevent identity theft or fraud. So we would need to ensure that the person really is who they say they are.
Representative Davids for follow-up, and then I would like to...
My question is, does the department, yes or no, Does the department support HF 1718 as currently amended? Yes or no?
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids, I can only respond by saying that right now we support legal presence, which would not be what this is required in this particular case, because there's no way for us to be able to verify legal presence with another country's.
Okay,
Ms. McCormick, Mr. Chair.
I will add one last question, Representative Davidson, and then we're going to have to.
Just very yes or no. Does the department support House File 1718 as amended? Yes or no?
Not, no.
Thank you.
Okay, members, we've had a good discussion. If there's no further discussion among members or questions to the author, yes.
Mr. Chairman, the motion is what?
Yes, Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chairman, the motion is for this bill to go somewhere to another committee or to the floor? Or?
Yeah, it's going to finance and then to transportation finance.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I apologize. I came in just a tad late, and I have one quick question.
We changed the motion too because it has to go to finance first. So.
Okay, I have one quick question. I guess
sure,
that is to the author or to Ms. McCormick or someone. Essentially, right now we do not issue driver's licenses to people who are here illegally. Correct?
Ms. McCormick, I assume that's to you.
So yes or no?
Yes or no,
Representative
to make
Davids,
it quick.
Let's
allow Chairman,
testifier to answer the question.
Mr. Chair,
Ms. McCormick,
and Representative Seifert, the department requires legal presence, so we don't issue documents unless you're here either temporarily or permanently on legally present in the United States.
And Mr. Chair, this bill would change that to allow someone who's here illegally to get a driver's license as a form of ID.
Representative Clark.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that question, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, this bill would change that to allow someone who's here not legally to then get a license, correct?
Mr. Chairman, I think it's pretty straightforward. What it says is that they would have to have the documentation and proof of who they are, their identity from another country, and whether that's secure or not might be the question that this committee, between now and the next committee, we can talk some more about levels of security. Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering if I could ask Mr. Nestor to come back and respond to one of the statements that's been made.
Yes, Representative Clark, but I would like us to, we have a long agenda, and
okay.
If there's no further discussion, I would
all
like
right.
to move to vote. But
all right, that's fine.
Okay.
We'll just do that.
Mr. Chair, just to clarify, I mean, saying who they are, who they say they are, is one thing, but legal or illegal is a different situation. So this would allow people here illegally to have a driver's license.
Representative Clark, do you want to respond?
It's yes or
Mr.
no?
Mr. Chairman, this is not, this is not a court of law. I don't appreciate the yes or no necessarily. What we're trying to talk about here is giving the opportunity for our department of motor vehicle services to be able to clearly identify the people that are coming before them asking for a driver's license to determine if they're telling the truth or not about who they are. And that's the step for this agency. There are other agencies that look at issues of immigration. It's not this agency.
Okay. Is there any further discussion about House File 1718? We do have a roll call that's been requested. And I do not hear any additional discussion, so the clerk will take the roll on the bill as amended.
Hornstein.
Aye.
Swales.
Aye.
Champion.
Aye.
Davids.
No.
Hausman.
Yes.
Holberg.
Yes.
Yes. Portman.
Aye.
Leader.
Yes.
Mason.
Aye.
McFarland. Morrow. Rosenthal.
Aye.
Torkelson.
No.
Erdahl. Welty.
No.
Seifert.
No.
Holberg.
Okay.
You're passing?
I'm passing, yep.
Okay.
Okay, there being 8 ayes, 5 nays, and 1 abstention, the motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Appreciate it.
All right, we have Representative Holbrook next. I want to thank the members of the public that were here, and we will now proceed with our agenda.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Holbrook.
I'd like to move House File 3450.
Okay, thank you. Representative Holbrook, I believe, again, this is another bill that would go to finance, transportation finance via finance.
Oh, okay. I wasn't aware of that, but...
Yeah.
Okay. Just a little history. This bill came about as a result of the UPA project a little over a year ago. The Met Council and MnDOT were before this body asking for permission to implement toll lanes in the 35W corridor. Historically, this body has been very reticent to support tolling. Generally, there was more than 130 votes against it when it would come as amendments on the House floor. Given the innovation with it, the money associated, etc., the House of Representatives and the Senate voted to approve the UPA project and implement tolling in the 35W corridor. What's happened is two things that were never either expressed or talked about in the process, and Chair Hornstein and I probably went to more meetings than most on this project, and never were these particular issues even addressed. But many of us were very surprised to find out when this toll lane opened that they extended hours from, instead of 6 to 9 in the morning northbound, they went from 6 to 10. They did take out the afternoon rush from 3 to 6 on the HOV northbound. And then southbound, instead of 3 to 6 in the afternoon, they went from 2 to 7. That caused a lot of consternation. But what's even worse as far as mobility in the corridor is that they had to stripe off the HOV lane, and they did solid white lines in order to limit access into the toll lane to specific stretches of the road for purposes of the transponder picking up the vehicles traveling to debit their accounts the appropriate amount for being in the HOV lane, which of course was part of the project in the beginning. But what's happened is those white lines now are functioning 24/7. And first of all, very few people, I think, are aware that if you cross those lines on Saturday afternoon when there's no tolling or anything, that they're actually breaking the law, which they are. But it's really frustrating if you are aware of the law and you're in a moderately heavy time, say, people going in for a Vikings game on a Sunday afternoon, and nobody can get into that far left-hand lane for long stretches of the corridor even to pass, and the lane's not being tolled. And another example of a problem is if you get in the far left-hand lane, say in Burnsville, because of how long that lane lasts in a solid nature, you can't even get off at 106th Street in Burnsville, in Bloomington across the river, because you'd have to cross the line to get off. Now, we recognize that there is a need to control access in and out of that lane during tolling, and we also recognize that there may be a need to meet federal standards in relative to mobility in an HOV lane. We don't want it to get too crowded, etc. But I think MnDOT's gone way too far in this, and they are going to express some concerns. I have said that I would work with them as far as trying to resolve this. Certainly, it wasn't my first choice to put in a bill. I did talk to them a number of months ago about this issue. And so we'll let MnDOT express their concerns, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. I guess we're going to finance. It's not a perfect bill, but these issues do need to be addressed in this corridor.
Thank you, Representative Holberg. And I just wanted to clarify to you, I mean, this has been kind of happening, unfortunately. We get some fiscal notes at the very end, or a message that there needs to be a fiscal note. And that's why, unfortunately, I did not know until just now that we were going to have to route you to finance. So apparently there's a fiscal cost.
And, Mr. Chair, that'd be fine, because what I'd like to know is I'd like to know how much money they're getting out of commuters between 2 and 3 in the afternoon to use that lane when it's just a money grab, when there isn't enough congestion in the corridor to warrant them charging what I call the sneeches with stars or the drivers with transponders for being in the little lanes.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's rare indeed that we have a member that wants to go to another committee that relishes that idea, but we have one here. Welcome to the committee. We have someone from MnDOT here, and please state your name for the record.
Yes, my name is Cassandra Isaacson. I'm the Assistant State Traffic Engineer.
And my name is Brian Perry. I'm the Freeway Operations Engineer.
And welcome to the committee, and please give us your perspective on House File 3450.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Holberg. Maybe just a little bit of background in terms of what the intent of the double way striping is for. As Representative Holberg said, it does help with allowing for our tolling infrastructure to have minimal readers, but there's a lot more to it, actually more operational needs as well as some safety reasons too. The areas that we have restricted access into that reversible lane, or into the HOV lane rather, is in major choke points or major weave sections, for example, going across the River Bridge, which is a major bottleneck in the morning, as well as going through the 494 interchange. Because of the weaving activity that takes place on the right-hand side, we didn't want to impose additional weaving on the left-hand side. So it does definitely have a safety and operational aspect to it. It prevents people from jumping in at the last second, going from very low-speed traffic to high-speed traffic, which has historically caused some crashes along the corridor. And it's very similar to the design that we have on 394, which is actually more restrictive in nature. The US DOT actually wanted us to follow more of the design of 394, and after some discussion with them, we were able to get a more open design, a much more flexible design on the 35W corridor. So it's different in some respects to that 394 corridor. And that is kind of the standard design that's kind of moving forward throughout the country for these types of lanes. And the spacing and the open access, or where the openings are, we did take into consideration providing access to local on and off ramps. We kind of feel that if you're in that left-hand lane at those opportunities to try to make an exit, that it would probably be an unsafe lane change to do anyway to try to make those potential exits that are potentially restricted right now. So we do have some concerns in that regard, and then in terms of the off-peak nature of it, mainly our concern is just having kind of consistent message throughout the day that it would be difficult to enforce, as well as kind of inform the public as to when these are actually restricted versus when they're not restricted.
Well, and Mr. Chair, just to that point, I think we need to be clear that I am not trying to undo the double white line during tolling. I understand the need to limit access, etc., but I think that this can easily be achieved with some signing about, you know, don't cross the solid line between, you know, certain hours, etc. And some of you that don't live in the corridor might wonder, well, why should I really care about this? Well, some people are so wildly excited about this, even though it's only been open a number of months, that they're working towards replicating this type of system on other commuter corridors in the Twin Cities. So while it may not be in your area now, it may be coming soon. So really, the limiting the mobility on the off-peak hours really makes no sense. Because you're not doing any type of tolling or transponder reading or anything. Basically, what you're doing is you're limiting people's ability to spread out or move around slower traffic, et cetera.
Okay. Response from MnDOT. Thank you, Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chairman, one of the things that the language as written, one of the concerns that MnDOT has is that today the double white lines that are out there, that restriction is not because of the Commissioner of Transportation. The Commissioner of Transportation doesn't make a double white line restrictive. A double white line is restrictive because it's restrictive. Just like a stop sign means stop. A double white line means do not cross. A double line anywhere is do not cross, and that's a federal standard that comes to us, and that we as an agency have put up signs to reinforce that standard. And the reason we have is that when we were working on the 394 corridor and we were having conversations with State Patrol, we had some existing small segments that had double white lines, and it was our understanding that there are some judges that if you only have markings, they're like, well, you should have had signs up, so they toss out tickets. And so we do have the signs to reinforce it. And so if this were to move forward, if we were going to allow people to cross the double, to move in and out of that lane off peak, wherever they wanted to along the corridor, it would be MnDOT's position that we need to modify both the pavement markings and the signing in order to accommodate that, because the traffic control devices that are out there, the pavement markings and the sign, need to match what the operations is. Today, the operations is that there is certain access points that you enter and exit, and so that's what the signing and pavement markings illustrate. If the operations of that corridor are going to change, then we need to have the flexibility to change those signs and pavement markings accordingly.
Okay, thank you very much. We have two members that have questions, and then I think we'll wind down this bill here. Representative Mason and Representative Portman.
Mr. Chair, and to the MnDOT
and Representative Riddle.
Testifiers. I'm going to focus just on the time frames. If the original time frames were supposed to be 6 to 9, I question why you would extend it. And then you had, I think it was a gentleman made the point, well, trying to do some consistency, but the point is you're not doing it 24 hours again a day anyway. So my thought is, what's the difference with what is on this bill versus what you have, and why did you make the extended time frame? And that's probably two questions, isn't it?
Okay. Thank you, Representative, and thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess if I'm understanding the question directly, it's more related to the actual expanding of the hours of tolling rather than just the striping itself. Okay. The reason for the expanded hours of tolling, we actually, as Representative Holberg mentioned, we did take away some of that off-peak direction of tolling. We're only tolling northbound in the AM and southbound in the PM, where they used to both directions be tolled during all hours. For the representative peaks, though, they were increased in terms of the hours of operations. The reason being is that the original hours were set back in the mid-80s, back when the corridor was originally established as an HOV corridor. And since then, traffic volumes have increased, congestion's increased, and so we wanted to make sure that we covered the entire peak period, as well as kind of setting us up for the future. Not only the distant future, but the very short-term future once the crosstown opens up, and some of the dynamics of the traffic volumes and routing on that corridor will change significantly once that project is complete. So we wanted to make sure we were ready for that that phase of the project. And we wanted to make sure that the hours of operation are, you know, starting soon enough and going late enough that they cover all hours of congestion, so that we can maintain the high performance of that HOV lane. And it also sets up nicely with a lot of the bus scheduling along the corridor as well, which operate outside those original hours.
And just to that point, they were able to provide me with some weekday speed drops below the target and the percentage of time and the federal standard. So I'll be happy to work with MnDOT as far as, you know, keeping a particular threshold in place, and then if we get congestion in those times and drop below this targeted amount, being able to deal with that. But if you, I'd be happy to provide this chart to anybody that wants to see it. You really just don't see the congestion from 2 to 3 or 6 to 7 southbound. Other than their numbers have a higher congestion in the Lyndale Avenue area, but of course we know that's a pre-crosstown project, et cetera, which will be markedly different, as they stated, after that project's complete.
Okay. Representative Portman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I missed the name of the gentleman who's testifying.
Yes, it's Brian Carey, K-A-R-Y, Freeway Operations Engineer.
Okay. Mr. Carey, you had mentioned something about consistency and wanting this lane to work like the one on 394. But my experience in driving the 394 corridor is that you can use the HOV lane in the off-peak hours, but on 35W you can't. And so that's my question is, why are they different, or what's the difference here?
No, the area of the HOV, HOT lane on the southern section of 35W is just like on 394, where you can use that during off-peak hours. The thing that on both corridors is the double white stripe is enforced 24 hours a day. The only section you may be referring to is on the northern piece, where there's the dynamic shoulder lane. That is operated as a shoulder during off-peak periods and then is operated as a min-pass lane or HOV express lane during peaks.
So then,
Representative Portman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, where is it that you have double white lines on the 35W piece? Because I am very sympathetic to Representative Holberg's concern, having driven that corridor and driven past those empty lanes and thinking, why in the off-peak hours can't people use them? And so I guess my question is, why do you have the double white lines where you do? And then my second question is, can't we put a single white line there and make that available during the off-peak hours?
And Mr. Chair, if I might, Representative Portman, you can use the far left-hand lane off-peak if you're lucky enough to be able to want to move in there when there's not a double white line and to know for sure that you can get out of there legally before you actually have to get off the freeway.
And so my question is, why do those double white lines start where they do, creating the problem that we now have?
Thank you, Representative Portman and Mr. Chair. The reason for the lines, or maybe to kind of explain first as to where the lines are, as you're heading northbound on the corridor, and I'm kind of going from memory here, they start roughly around like Cliff Road or just south of the River Bridge and continue to the north end of the River Bridge, roughly around 106th Street. Then it's open access basically from 106th Street up to around probably 82nd, and then closed again just through the 494 interchange, so just immediately south of the interchange, just north of the interchange. And the southbound is much more open. The only double white stripe right now is within the 494 interchange, basically mirroring the northbound. The reason for the double white stripe in the area of the River Bridge is that's kind of the major bottleneck area along the corridor, and we wanted to prevent vehicles from jumping into that HOV or min-pass lane during peak periods where they would be coming from a virtual stop to try to get up to a high speed. That was something that historically was causing a lot of crashes along that corridor. And then really the same thing at the 494 interchange up on the north end in both directions, not only because of that being a major bottleneck, but also because of a lot of the weaving activity going on the right-hand side with traffic entering and exiting from 494. We wanted to kind of limit the in and out or weaving on the left-hand side so that there was less going on within that interchange to help improve the operations as well as safety.
Follow up.
Representative Portman.
And then, so where these lines are located, is that dictated at all with our agreement with the federal government under the UPA, or is this a MnDOT discretionary decision?
I guess, yeah, I don't know the answer directly. I know it was done in conjunction with the USDOT and the local federal highway office. They were supportive of the final design plan for where the striping would go. At first, as I kind of mentioned earlier, they were actually looking for more restrictive access, more similar to 394, where 394 is much more closed, much more restricted than the 35W corridors.
Mr. Chair.
Last follow-up.
Just a comment then. You know, I really agree with Section 1. I think I hope we'll work on Section 2 as Representative Holberg moves the bill forward, because I do think rush hour goes different hours than it used to. But I really think when we're building this kind of infrastructure with the amount of money that we're investing in the asphalt that's lying there, that we want people to be able to use it. And so I support her bill, and I hope others will too.
All right. Concluding comment from MnDOT, concluding comment from the author, and then we need to move on.
Mr. Chair, in the interest of time, we'll just probably see most of you again in finance.
Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me. Representative Erdahl, I'm sorry. He has a question, and I'm going to defer to our Republican lead here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, I was ready to just move on, but Representative Davids wanted me to make sure I asked, so what's a single white line do?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, a single white line, the manual on uniform traffic control devices describes lines. Double lines are restrictive. You do not cross them. Much on a two-lane highway, when there's a double yellow line, you can't pass. A single white line discourages lane changing. That's what we have in the tunnel on Interstate 94. It's not prohibited. You don't get a ticket if you change lanes, but it's to discourage the lane changing, much like if you notice turn lanes, like a right turn lane, there's a solid line along there. It's not prohibited that you change lanes. It's discouraged.
Representative Riddle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm glad to get that clarification. I'll explain to Representative Davids. I've noticed those single white lines in the tunnel, and frankly, I've been not crossing them.
And we encourage you to continue not crossing.
But I will say the when you are in the far left going to the toward the west, to get to the Highway 12, you know, 394 exit that I need to get to, it sometimes is kind of tricky to go through all those lanes of traffic to get over to the far right. So sometimes I try to get there as quickly as I can.
Okay. I think you were in the middle. I'm sorry. Very short summary, and then we'll call on Representative Holberg and we'll take a vote.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Just in summary, I think Brian has explained some of the operational issues. I would say that this language as written is very prescriptive as to the traffic control devices, and we are concerned with that. We would prefer that the language be modified so that we have some flexibility. For example, if we have a work zone or emergencies and things like that, we need to be able to modify pavement markings and signing according to our engineering standards rather than specifically prescribed in statute.
And Mr. Chair, I'm agreeable to work with MnDOT. I've been trying for a number of months to get them to address the concerns in that corridor, and I think they're ready to do that now.
Okay. Well, thank you, Representative Holberg, for bringing the bill to us, and thank you, MnDOT, for your perspective. I think we are ready to vote, and so Representative Holberg will renew her motion that House File 3450 be recommended to pass and sent to the Finance Committee with a re-referral to the Transportation Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you very much, members. And, you know, I see that we have Mr. Cardenas here, and so what I would like to do is take, let's go out of order a little bit here and take House File 3461 first. I have a couple bills, so.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative.
Just a brief moment of personal privilege here.
Absolutely.
Just sorry that I missed the roll call vote earlier, but at 20 minutes to the hour, I was notified that I had 5 minutes to get an amendment in to meet the 24-hour rule of a bill that I have up tomorrow.
Okay.
So I wasn't trying to avoid anything.
Okay, we'll note that on the record. All right.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Holberg.
If I might, I'd like to know what committee chairperson is enforcing a 24-hour rule with all this craziness going on this week.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm going to just chime in. I, too, had the amendment problem. And, yes, there are chairs who are enforcing the 24-hour rule.
Okay, well, this chair is going over to testify on the bill. Oh, you know what, members? We're going to do one thing here. Representative Bly is here. And we have a motion for reconsideration. This will just take 1 minute. So, members, what we're doing here, and the minority has been informed as well, is that we are going to, Representative Bly will have a member of the committee move to reconsider a bill that was before this committee last year. He's the author of it, and it's within the rules. It's his prerogative to reconsider a House file. Can you give me the number, please? Senate File 47. And so Representative Leader, Chairman Leader, has the motion before us. This is not going to involve public testimony. It's a reconsideration. So Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Motion. Chair. I move that the vote taken on the motion to recommend passage as amended Senate file number 47 on April 2nd, 2009, be now reconsidered, and move that the bill pass and be sent to the general register.
That's correct. Okay. Members, we're not taking testimony, but here's the situation. This bill was heard in the committee, and I'll just brief Representative Seifert because he wasn't here earlier.
I just did.
Okay.
He's ready to vote.
Representative Seifert is fully informed and ready to vote. This is a bill that lifts the law that prohibits a study of a commuter rail corridor along the Dan Patch line between Northfield and Minneapolis. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. This is the vote to reconsider. All those, and then we'll vote on the other vote. All those in favor of reconsideration signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
No.
The chair is in doubt here on that one, so we'll just have to have a division. So all those in favor of reconsideration. All those opposed? Okay. We have
six in favor, seven.
Six ayes and seven against the motion for reconsideration. So that fails. Thank you for attending. Okay. So we are now back to our agenda. And
Representative Hornstein, would you like to move House File 3461?
Yes, Madam Chair, members, House File 3461. I would like to move for passage and re-referral to the Finance Committee and then the Transportation Finance Committee.
All right.
There is a fiscal note to the bill.
I
think similar to what we've had in previous bills, it's kind of in process. So, members, this bill comes as a result of conversations that I've had with members of the disability community, primarily Mr. Cardness from Acting for Change Together and others. There is an issue with a pedestrian crossing at the Central Corridor in downtown St. Paul. And as Mr. Cardness had informed me, it's going to be very difficult at this place for people, particularly with disabilities, to move across the street. It's a very busy part of downtown. And I'll have Mr. Cardness outline the problem for you, and I know that the Met Council does have some concerns, and we'll obviously hear from them. So I would just pass it over to Mr. Cardness to...
Mr. Cardness, would you please identify yourself for the tape and begin your testimony?
I'm Rick Cardness, Advocating Change Together in St. Paul.
Could you move the mic a little closer to him, Representative Hornstein? Thank you.
Stretch. That's it. Yeah.
All right, thank you.
I think we'll do our best here.
Okay. Thank you.
And I think you have a map of what this light rail transit is. Main station downtown St. Paul is going to look like. And I know that just recently found out that the Met Council, of course, will oppose the idea of an elevator there. And as you see, the main station, this is going to be the main station in downtown St. Paul. The tearing down of the Skyway from the Alliance Bank all the way over to the Pioneer Press building will no longer exist, but there will be a temporary Skyway put up after after they finished the light rail transit station. So there will be no access up or down to the Skyway. And in actuality, when you look at number one on the north end, the Alliance Bank, those doors will be closed probably at 6 p.m. at the latest. And over at the First National Bank, they close probably earlier than 6 p.m. Number three is a parking ramp where there is the only access to the Skyway system after the Skyway is completed. Number four, there is no access through the Pioneer Press building. So there's a couple of blocked transportation issue within trying to get this access station, trying to get access to the Skyway system. I live downtown St. Paul, and I use the Skyway system all the time. So it's not a, but there, if I take the light rail transit from somewhere else, say from the Capitol downtown, I can no longer get into the Skyway system summer, winter, fall, anytime. And it's, so it's not a very good design. And actually, they call it a temporary situation until there's a building built there. And if you note that empty lot to the north northeast of that, that's been an empty lot for 25 years. So the temporariness of this is pretty permanent. It's pretty permanent, and there will never be access to this. So my the bill that I asked to be presented is going to provide elevator access. And one of the statements that the Met Council is making is that there is no plan for it. Well, I've been trying to think of an analogy of building something and then not having a plan for it. And so I can't come up with an analogy, and I hope someone on the committee would come up with a great analogy of building something with no access for a number of blocks over blocks and blocks. So that's the issue. And I'd like to have Cliff Potes address his issue.
Just one moment. I think your analogy would be a treehouse without a rope. So
hey,
something
like that. I wish I would have thought of that. I'm going to put that down. Thank you.
All right. Welcome to the committee, and would you please identify yourself?
My name is Cliff Potes. Madam Chairman, I'm a member of the committee. My name is Cliff Potes. I'm a member of South Advocates Minnesota Sam. I ride the city buses, and I use them. Oh,
oops! Good. Hold on, gang.
Good thing, man.
I want to move the table.
I ride the city bus, and I use a lot of Met Mobility. I also ride the LST. I have used it in Washington, D.C., but the point in Minneapolis and St. Paul, I look forward to riding the LRT to the Capitol in St. Paul. Ladies and gentlemen, it seems dumb that the Met Council spends money on putting elevators in all of the other stuff. Why not do it up front rather than have to redo it again? They've been talking about LRT forever. They've been pushing the right rail for St. Paul. Let's do it right the first time. If they have to redo it, then that'll be a more house sale to you guys than if they do it up front. They did it when they wanted to put, they didn't want to put the thing that slides out to get people on wheelchairs. It took them a while to view the DC system before they included it in their plan, and it has worked out good. So all I'm saying, do it right in the beginning, then they don't have to redo it again. Thank you. I'll answer any questions.
All right. Thank you very much for your testimony. Are there any questions or statements from the committee related to this issue? Not hearing any, then Representative, oh, do we have someone from the audience to testify? Please come down to the... Please come. Yes, we'd love to hear from you. Mr. Lamb?
Actually, Mr. Lamb is here, but my name is Richard Rovang. R-O-V is in Victor, A-N-G.
Welcome to the committee. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm the Assistant General Manager for Metro Transit and the Deputy Project Director for Central Corridor. We would agree that the only place we believe that this this legislation would apply to is that singular location in the diagonal block between Cedar Street on 5th and Minnesota and 4th. The Central Corridor project has only committed to restoration of the skyway there, and I would emphasize restoration. We're just building back the segment that will be demolished as a part of the Bremer Bank building demo in the St. Paul area, diagonal area. That construction actually won't take place until about 2011, but we're only doing this because it's directly related to the construction and is covered under the project budget. In other words, we're replacing something just as it is there now. Currently, there is no vertical circulation at this location, and the project has no plan or budget to provide a vertical circulation where none exists today. We would consider this, along with many other items, as a betterment, and the project doesn't have money to pay for betterments. Neither the city nor any developer that we're aware of has come forward with a plan for developing the diagonal site around the station, so we believe this request is really premature. No one knows where the vertical access should be and how it would actually integrate with that building when it will be built in the future. The connection to the skyway could be completely different from an engineering standpoint when the building or development occurs there. We have submitted our final budget and project scope to FTA, and it does not include this work.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Rovang. Any questions? Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Rovang. I'm just trying to make sure I understand the situation as you're describing it. As I look at this depiction that we were shown a few minutes ago, I don't know if you have you have something similar. I'm trying to figure out the word betterment. So there's not currently any tracks in this area. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So if one is in a wheelchair, one could traverse in this area right now.
This area is within a building now.
Okay. That's going to be torn down.
That's correct.
Am I also correct in understanding that a person in a wheelchair, once the tracks are put in place, would have great difficulty getting from one side of the track to the other in this location, especially in the hours that were described?
No, there will be crossings, ADA accessible crossings across the track at both ends. So this is not related to the ground level situation at all. It's only related to the skyway level. And there will be the same access after we have built back the skyway as there is today.
All right, any other questions, members? Mr. Gornis?
Yes, I know that Madam Chair, members of the committee, the building that will be torn down prior times has an elevator and has a public access. Bremer Bank has vacated that building because the light rail is coming through. Prior to that, I had access to the street from the skyway. So there is not, even though it's called betterment now, they're tearing down it, so that's worsenment or something. The building is there, and it has an elevator that allows one to get down to the street level. So there's a a little bit of an interpretation on what betterment is and what it is not. So that's, and I know there probably is a fiscal note in there, but I know there's not going to be a building there any longer.
So. All right. So Representative Hornstein, any final words on your bill?
Thank you, members. I think what I'd like to do is there is, because there's the fiscal note and there's general fund expenditures, which, as you know, are problematic, we would need to potentially park this in the Finance Committee. And what I'd like to do in the interim is to really see if we can get some of the advocates that were here to sit down and talk to not only the Met Council, but there's other stakeholders, the building owners and managers of St. Paul, and figure out a way to address this issue. I think there's a way out. I think that we can get people together and figure this out. It's, again, I think a very important and legitimate mobility concern. But, again, I'm realistic enough to know that we have some very limited resources, and we can go to finance. We'll have a little time to work this through, and that's really, I'm realistic about that, but I think to acknowledge that there's some concerns is important.
All
so
right.
With that, Madam Chair, I would just renew my motion.
All right. So Representative Hornstein renews his motion that House File 3461 be sent to Finance and then re-referred to Transportation Finance. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion carried.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
All right, Representative Hornstein, we have actually 2 minutes left of our assigned hearing time. Do you want
to Madam Chair, we have an important bill for the Met Council. I don't know if the Met Council people can come back in the evening. If not, we could try, but it may be best. It sounds like they can, so maybe we could take this up when we reconvene at 6 o'clock. I think that might be the best solution to this.
All right, so our committee will reconvene at 6 o'clock in room 5? 300 North. All right, so meeting in recess. Adjourned. Okay, thank you.
Bill 3286, Representative Hornstein, the Metropolitan Council. Best value contracts and procurement authorized for smaller vehicles, or for transit vehicles. This bill go to the state and local government operations. There's no cost. Make your motion. You have an amendment? A2 amendment? Hornstein has moved the A2 amendment to get the bill in the form that he would wish. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Representative Hornstein, your bill is before us. Thank you. comments, and I'll remind the representative leader to go through the chair when he makes comments in the future. But
he couldn't see me. He was blind.
Are there any questions of Mr. Lamb or Representative Hornstein? Anyone else from the audience wish to make any statements? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Bill carries. Representative Hornstein bill, 3460. I believe this one goes to the General Register. Make your motion, Representative Hornstein. I don't see any amendments to this bill. Other audience have any questions or comments? All right, seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Bill carries.
I think, again, moving right along, this bill should take us no less than 30 seconds, but House File 3221, Representative Holbert. Neither of us moved House File 3221 to the General Register, so I'll make that motion. Okay, questions, members? Okay. All those in favor of House File 3221 being recommended to pass and sent to the General Register? Aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion. House File 2561, Representative Kalin, and that's the North Branch Veterans Memorial Bridge. So I would move that that be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Both House File 2561 and House File 2571 have come at the request of a group of families, specifically families that have rallied around the Benson family. Your bill will portion of a major highway branch, the town here as a memorial highway, but it, as members of this committee remember, I serve on the funding committee last year. Is there a discussion of House File 2561? Okay, seeing none, I will read. Anyone from the audience? No one from North Branch Citizens, I guess. All right.
those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. That's an active group. They haven't. I'm surprised they're not here. Okay, and we're continuing on with House File 2575, and members, I will recommend that recommended to pass and also sent to the General Register. And I believe we have an amendment. Is that correct? Okay, I'll move the A10-2289 amendments. Representative King, short explanation.
Mr. Chair, the amendment is straightforward. Initially, the community was working with MnDOT to create the section of 35 as we're going to the Johnson Defense of the Memorial Highway. Working with MnDOT, we realized that the better approach would be to leave the section of 95, which passes over the interstate.
Thank you, members. We have a biography.
Mr. Chair, maybe perhaps just briefly, just a tiny little bit of background on Corporal Benson, who's a graduate of North Branch High School in 2004, and served as a Green Company K in the 3rd Battalion of the 1st Green Division in Iraq. He was on his second tour and suffered a life-threatening wound. Months that he fought for his life in Texas were really a rallying point for success. When he suffered a stroke on both sides of his brain, when he passed away, I think that it's very clear that it's been one of those opportunities for a community that actually is deeply engaged in sometimes as specific as it needs, that this has been a point of unity. And I believe that the support of that is simple and profound ways as well. Us as we struggle with our differences.
Thank you, Representative Kalin, and thank you just over so many bills and work with veterans in general. Really great. I think it's going to be a nice place. We have a question, I believe, from Representative Erdogan.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just not really so specifically for this one, but just generally on these signs. How much do signs cost? Anyone know?
No, we're not deferring to the former county engineer up in the. But we do have someone from MnDOT here. Can answer that question, Representative. Welcome back. Please state your name for the record.
Sign that said, like, you know, Shemansky, it costs more than David's.
Depends if there's a picture or
not. Mr. Chairman, just
Representative Erdahl. Tradition for the Transportation Policy Committee on the last night. Kind of crazy.
Just so in this instance, who pays in your area for this?
Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, the city's resolution recognizes that whereas the state of Minnesota does not fund signage for such concessions, and the Benson family and the BMW were working with the as well as I just want to thank MnDOT for working with Central CTA. I just want to thank MnDOT for a small little deal.
adoption of House File 2575 as amended. I will renew my motion that House File 2575 as amended be recommended to pass, and I'll register all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion carries. We are moving quickly. Representative Fritz was here. He is here still. We have also, we'll have your testimony, and then also Ms. Isaacson, sorry. Representative Fritz, I will, although I have concerns about it, I will still move your bill, House File 2963, recommended to pass and sent to the General Register, so we have that before. We welcome you, and
no.
Have a couple more, several more.
I expressed her concerns
parking lot or on the freeway, you'll know I have no problem with lowering speed limits. Absolutely not. But but I think you're right, Representative Fritz. I mean, there's a process. I think Chairman Leader will say that, you know, we have a system and we can't just sort of willy-nilly start prescribing speed limits up, down, whatever. We would have a very if you think this agenda is long tonight, we would be here 24/7 doing bills like this. So we can have some discussion. I see Representative Erdahl, but I think what we'll do is maybe remove the bill just to be laid over, so we'll give you some more time to deal with this. So it's still before us, but laid over, perhaps for another time. But Representative Leader, and then Representative Erdahl.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I just assume or not say, but I don't think you need to lay the bill over because I think we don't need it. The county board just has to pass a resolution requesting it, and the MnDOT does it. So to get a bill, I don't think we should get it in statute because the statutes are there. I mean, Representative Fritz, you don't need it. The county board just passes a resolution, sends it to the district engineer, the MnDOT, and they do it. So you won't need a bill. I mean, you won't need to work on the bill.
Okay, well, okay. All right, well, we'll continue our discussion and, you know, you have that option as well. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to be consistent, a quick comment. If we raise the speed limit to 65, they might be through there before the deer noticed.
Okay. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a whole series of questions, but I think your approach is very wise, and I'll defer my question until a later time.
Is there any further discussion of House File 2963? We'll just lay this bill on the table, and hopefully the county board and you and MnDOT can work things out. Thank you very much.
I still say Sean makes a better spot.
Representative Norton has been waiting very patiently.
More people should work here.
It's good to see you. It wouldn't be a Transportation Policy Committee meeting without a Highway 14 bill. So, but we're not doing the EIS. So, Representative Norton, welcome to the committee. This is House File 1000. So it looks like you introduced this a while back. Move that this bill be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. I'll move that. Welcome and great to see you.
Mr. Chair, members, we have a House File 1000 before you, and this is one of those times where you have a constituent that approaches you with a thought or idea. This particular constituent is a bit of a historian, so we're all maybe concerned about what's going on instead of the constituent itself. Ray and his wife have spent many years going to Yellowstone and elsewhere. We'll talk about that, but he has been bringing history back with him and collecting information over the years. And you may not be aware that South Dakota has a designation for the Finding Valley Trail, and there's a one on the South Dakota. I'll let him tell you the story. So we're looking to see if we can continue on that designation through the state of Minnesota with some minimal signage, perhaps on either end of the state. But there's much money, and we don't want to.
Good evening. Thank you for coming. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for our record.
Thank you.
questions for Mr. Ricketts, Representative Rudolph.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Ricketts, I actually have had concerns expressed to me about the Laura Ingalls Wilder segment of the trail. Could you tell me where that runs from where to where?
Mr. Ricketts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Rickert, well, then, you said that you talked to someone from the Laura Ingalls Wilder Trail Association or whatever, and they don't have a problem with this. Well, how would the names coexist? Would this supplant or supplement? I didn't mean to do that, but...
Well, that's actually the question on the table.
Yes.
Stakeholders on the panel here, so I'd like them to weigh in as well. Representative Erdahl and Representative Moore.
Quickly, so essentially the highway would have two names?
Mr. Ricketts.
Segment of the black.
Okay. Representative Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Norton, Mr. Ricketts. And I don't have a problem with this, although I know that Representative Torkelson and I were talking about selling the naming rights in order to expand Highway 14 in our area. So if you can come up with a black and yellow sponsor, maybe. I do want to note, though, we do have a highway, and not this is not a serious bill, but I hope that you understand where this is coming from. Again, last week we had a fatality on Highway 14 in my district, and I think every year I've been in this legislature, we've had another fatality in my area on Highway 14. I don't object to the naming. I do object to what's happening on my highway section in my area, and I will have a bill, members in the Finance Committee, to try once again. I think Representative Torkelson may be joining me on this. To address this situation. So I'm not opposed to it, but I do have to say, if for no one else from my constituents back home, I'm doing more than just voting on naming the road. I'm trying to fix the road.
Point well taken. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would echo many of Representative Morrow's sentiments. I do happen to represent a section of Highway 14 all the way from New Ulm to Walnut Grove, so I have an interest in the highway. I also have an interest in Laura Ingalls Wilder, as Walnut Grove is the home of the Laura Ingalls Wilder pageant every summer, and I invite you all to attend that at your earliest convenience. But I, too, share of some of President Morrow's concerns about the safety of this highway and the need for upgrade. And I will be talking to my folks that are interested in Laura Ingalls Wilder to make sure that this does not step on their toes in any way.
Yes. Are there any other members who want to testify? I think MnDOT has a perspective on this as well, so I'd like to share that. Again, I'm sorry. I'll leave it up to the committee. I really appreciate, Mr. Higgins, all the hard work you've done. As a history major, you know, former history major, this is very important stuff. You know, I have some concerns about that, the Laura Ingalls Wilder issue. But, you know, perhaps I think we'll leave it up to the committee, Representative Norton. I think some questions about that would probably need to be answered before the legislature takes action as a whole on it. But, you know, we do have the motion before us, and I'll renew it. Well, I think that those questions would have to be answered, but I will renew my motion that House File 1000 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion. We do have a no, but the motion prevails. I was a little quick on the gavel. Sorry about that, Michael. Okay. Representative Rosenthal, this will be another opportunity for Representative Davis to perhaps pin down the Department of Okay, Representative Rosenthal, this bill does have a fiscal note, so we're going to need to this go to the finance and then transportation finance, and I will move that motion that House File 3462 be recommended to pass and then sent to the Transportation Finance Committee via the Finance Committee. Are there any questions?
members, I believe this would be a transportation finance issue.
Ms. Sewers, we don't collect fines, do we? I mean, we don't get fines in. Is that our guns? I didn't realize we got fines in our budget.
And actually, Representative Leader, Chairman Leader, maybe Ms. McCormick can just shed some light on that. Is there any further discussion on House File 3462? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that House File 3462 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Transportation Finance Committee via the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion carried.
Mr. Chair? I'd like to move the next bill on the agenda, Senate File 2572, and I have a bet with Representative Hash you can get this done in under 2 minutes.
Okay.
What's the next? He gets to get out of here. And so do we.
Thank you. Representative Hash, good to see you in our committee. Our motion's before us, and it goes to the General Register, I believe. So we'll... Holbert motion is to move House File 2572, Senate File, I'm sorry, 2572 to the General Register. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll never say a bill is simple.
We're going to be here for an hour.
This bill should simply pass with a large majority. The bill didn't pass on the Senate on the floor. This allows individuals who
just a very quick question. So let's say I'm stopped for just driving too slowly. And things happen and my car's impounded, but I need to get it, but it's on a Saturday. What, I mean, do I then wait till Monday or whenever the next business day is?
Mr. Chair, I'm assuming that depends on whoever has it. Probably where you're
we are ready. Representative Holberg renews her motion that House File, or Senate File 2572 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails.
6 seconds over.
It's my question. I'm sorry. I take full responsibility.
I think you just set me up to lose the bet.
Well, I'll bring John for something
else. All right. You have a testifier, so I think it's going to be tough anyway, Representative Holberg.
Yeah.
But I'll move House File 3420 be recommended to pass, and this is also going to be sent to the General Register.
And Mr. Chair, it's even worse
than I'm okay. Okay. This is just simply a deletion of the last half of line 11 and all of line 12. Mr. Burris, have that, maybe you could just repeat the oral amendment to the committee.
Mr. Chair and members, I have that the oral amendment is H2, line 11. Delete everything after 390.5 in the insert period. H2, delete line 12.
Okay. Well, I don't know. We have an AP English here, too. Is that a sort of a hanging sentence? It starts with, except that the person must be licensed or remains in the bill?
No.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Okay. Oh, after. Okay. Okay. All right. Sorry about that. Thank you very much. Okay, so all in favor of the Holbrook oral amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. The bill is before us, and the... Welcome back. You're doing a time and a half today. As familiar as Representative Holbrook with issues of data, how it's used, and practices with that, and so I think it's Representative Holbrook is comfortable with it, a certain level of comfort. Any further discussion of House File 3420 as amended? Representative Holbrook renews her motion that House File 3420 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative David.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have a division minutes in our packets here, and I believe that this meeting tonight is a continuation of the meeting this afternoon, but yet the minutes say that we adjourned at 2:27 p.m. So do those need to be corrected?
Yes, absolutely, because we were in recess. So Representative Davids moves that the minutes from this afternoon.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would just say that we wait until they've been corrected.
Yeah, so we will
just do that. We'll take that on advisement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Portman.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I wasn't in the room the whole time we had committee previously. But did we approve the previous meeting's minutes because there was an error and it did need to be corrected?
We corrected one error in terms of one member's name.
I passed it along to the committee legislative assistant, but I didn't know if the motion to approve those minutes needed to be reconsidered, so should we correct that?
Okay.
Representative Swales. Great to see you. This is an important bill. I'll move House File 3506 be recommended to pass and sent to the Transportation Finance Committee via the Finance Committee.
Said,
And I understand there's a fiscal note that this is not a fiscal committee, so it's the policy we're looking at. I guess it begs the question, Hennepin County's already has this, so it would be Washington County. What's stopping Ramsey County from coming in, Dakota County from coming in, Fillmore County from coming in the other 85 counties? Because we already have Hennepin out, and now you want to be out. What's to stop the other 85 counties from wanting to do the same thing?
Well,
because Mr. Chairman, I can see a lot of amendments coming on this one on the House floor. From about 85 counties.
Well, and I think that's where I would hope that the author would work. Parties work out to the next committees.
Mr. Chairman, does the DOT have a position on this issue?
We can call them up. That's a fair and legitimate question. Is there someone with truck weight expertise? I think it could be the State Patrol. Welcome back to the committee. State your name for the record. Thank you. We think we're interested, perhaps.
Mr. Chair, my question to the officer would be, or to the patrolman, State Patrol would be, does the State Patrol support this bill, House File 3506? Mr. Chairman, to the trooper, do the state troopers support or oppose this bill? Mr. Chairman, I've never questioned his honesty. I'm sure he's very honest.
Proceed.
It says accept as provided in paragraph D, this happens, all penalties should be credited to the highway user distribution fund.
I see that. Okay.
So you're going to see, you know, we're gonna, with Washington, if it's another 70, with the whole state, it'd be, you know.
School implications. Okay. As the representative leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At Camp Nurkwerk, or not Camp, this is Major, no Camp. Is the wording correctly then? Are you saying that basically it's a civil penalty and that isn't what they would want to be getting? Washington County, if this were to pass, is this language correct then? Or should the bill be changed to as I understand it, you say the civil penalty is not, that's done at the place of origin, at the elevator itself, and I think the deputy was saying these weight limits and the help that they get is done on the road. So that's a different penalty than this. Is that still a civil penalty?
Captain?
I'm concerned that they maybe want to change the language in the bill so that Washington County can get them.
Yeah. So probably another assignment. Okay. Is there any further discussion of House File 3506? Representative Mason. Representative Shemansky, we're glad to see you here. I will move House File 3458. We recommend it to pass, and then this also needs to be re-referred to the Transportation Finance Committee, Chairman Leaders Committee, via the Finance Committee. So take it away, Representative Shemansky. We have roundabouts like they have in Massachusetts, right?
Yeah. Representative Shemansky, thanks for the work you've done with the stakeholders here, but we do have Ms. Isaacson, one more time. You are earning your keep today. Welcome back. Please state your name once more for the record. Probably need one for you next time. Or McDoo. Discussion, House File 3458. Representative
House. So I didn't quite track. Does this go to the floor?
No, it's going to Representative Leader's Committee. The chairman needs to see it because there's going to be a fiscal process to do a study. And
so the suggestions that Representative Leader made about bill content would perhaps be worked on before that time.
Correct. If we provided this pass. Okay. So is there any further discussion of House File 3450? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Members, just before we adjourn, possibly for the biennium, I wanted to first and foremost thank Annie Krapik, our wonderful page. She's done really great work for us this whole session. And we have our great staff people from the caucuses and Abby and Rydek, and we have case we don't meet on the 17th. The situation is I don't know yet if we have any Senate files. If we do have Senate files, we will meet at 1 p.m. at our normal meeting time on Wednesday, March 17th. So members should have that on your calendars. If there are no Senate files, we're done for the year. We've considered all the House files. But of course, Ms. Brydeck will be informing you in the event that there is not. At this point, have it on your calendars. I'm not aware of Senate files. It's possible we'll have some. Actually, likely, but just in case, I wanted to thank you. So, yes, Representative Riddle.
Thank you, and also, just in case, on behalf of the minority members, I'd like to thank the staff for the hard work and the good work that that you've done for this committee, and also Chairman Hornstein, I'd like to thank you for the fairness and the efficiency with which the committee has been operating.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate this, and again, transportation is one of those issues, I think, fortunately, that we have some really good bipartisan relationships and feeling on, and I hope we can continue that now and into the future. So with that, we're adjourned for this evening, possibly the year. We are on hold for March 17th. Thank you very much, members.